What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 59 of Value Town. I'm Chan Man V, and joining me every week are my co-hosts here, Raynad and Noxious. What's going on, guys? Noxious, I know you just got back from Star Ladder. You rested up, recovered from...
Yeah, well, kind of rested up. I mean, I'm still jet lag, and I'm still trying to recover from it, but yeah, I'm good.
Awesome.
I guess.
And Raynad, how are you doing, man? I was watching your late night streams with Abdu. I mean, those are some good times, man.
Yeah, man. I'm all right. I'm on that sleep schedule where I, you know, fall asleep at like 8 a.m. now, so.
Fall asleep at 8 a.m.? Wow. God.
Yeah, so I'm on like an hour of sleep right now, but I'm good. I'm going to live.
Well, thanks for getting up, man, for the show. Got a pretty cool lineup of topics here for us today. Of course, we're going to be going through, you can kind of see the topics there, but real quick, just our week in Hearthstone, what we've been doing. Star Ladder, just how to break into the scene as a player, just net decking, the good and bad things of it, and design discussions. We'll talk about Entombed, maybe some talk about Charge. And then we got some Q&A, like we always do each and every week, where you can tweet your questions at ValueTownGG, and we'll read some of those out at the end of the show. But yeah, let's talk about what we've been up to this week. You know, I was mentioning Star Ladder, Noxious, but so I know that's for the most part where you've been. How was the entire event and everything for you?
Dude, that was actually like really fucking awesome. Like the organizers from Star Ladder are probably some of the most, I want to say like considerate guys that I've worked with. I mean, I haven't worked with every single company out there, but they really do go out of their way to do everything right. There's been a hiccup or a few hiccups, I guess, during the event, which is unfortunate, but the whole thing was really awesome. I feel like it was one of the coolest tournaments I've looked at of recent memory.
Oh, awesome. Ray, what about you? Just Hearthstone-wise, what you been up to?
Just Ladder. I've only really been playing on stream lately, so I got to the point where I'm playing a lot of weird stuff towards the end of the month, just experimenting.
That's the fun time, right? Like getting a chance to play all kinds of shit.
It depends entirely on how much you're losing. But, yeah. So that's pretty much all I really did. Not sure. I want to make a push for a high legend rank, but after last month, I'm like really disincentivized. So I'll probably just end up like not playing ladder on the last day. Or we'll see. What I've noticed is like the first 30 days of the month kind of don't matter as long as you're in striking distance at the end, and then you can play in the last hour.
That's so true. That's absolutely true, right? That's pretty much what I've seen for everybody, too. I mean, if you get to rank one, how far can you drop in the last day, you think?
You drop one rank per minute.
One rank per minute? Oh, my God. Okay. So, yeah, like you have to play no matter what. That's going to be crazy. Yeah, that should be coming up in the next few days, actually. So, what is that? Yeah, about 4 days, and it's gonna be the end of the season. It's going to be a wild time again, and, yeah, it'd be good to see you. Try to make a push for it, but I know how frustrating it was for you last month, so don't
bullshit,
blame
dude. It was actual bullshit.
Like, bullshit, yeah. That's the word.
Bullshit. Oh man.
On December 30th, I fall asleep at rank 7. And I wake up at rank 40. And then I talk to Gara and he says, oh, an EU, because the season in EU ends earlier. He's like, oh yeah, in the last hour, everyone in the top 100 was losing one rank per minute.
Oh my god.
NA, it was dropping faster than that, even. So it's just like you sit there playing, praying to God that you hit like four good matchups in a row. Ladder is 50% paladin, 40% freeze mage, 10%
trash. Oh no, it's like, fucking depressing.
Oh man.
Hope to dodge
like such meta diversity.
That about sums it up. Shaman? You see Shaman?
No, but like, if there's so much secret paladin, is that just an okay pick, I guess?
It is, but it sucks against so many other things.
I was explaining what the meta was. It's 40% freeze mage, which is the counter to paladin.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the freeze mage deck, which has like only a good matchup against paladin, trying to queue into all the paladins, and then the people that like won were the paladins who got the mirrors and got a streak, or the other like 10% of decks, which was like some weird stuff on the last day.
Reno or Warlock or
Zoo.
Zoo.
Mm-hmm. But it was like Elven Archer, Hobgoblin Zoo, and just weird
what?
Stuff.
What? Really? Wow. The
Fibonacci got rank one, I think, with like Deathwing Warrior or something.
Yeah, yeah. That was a while back, though, right? Or like last season?
Well, that was last season, yeah.
Is that what we're talking about? The last day of...
Yeah. So last, yeah. I was thinking about like if you're talking about like right now. Yeah, that deck was pretty cool. It was different, at least. Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. Well. So I guess next the Star Ladder is kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about, which like Noxus, you mentioned it being a great tournament. It definitely was. I definitely caught a lot of the matches, but the finals. You know, of course, there's always some type of issue or drama at these tournaments. It seems like we've had 2 years of Hearthstone events and we still have these things happen. So in the finals on game one, near the end of the game, where it was looking like Cypher had complete control of the game. I mean, very, very high percent chance of winning at that point. The entire connection for both players just disconnected. And then there was some, you know, talk as to what was going on, and the I believe the admins had to make a decision on it because the rules weren't clear. Noxious, why don't you talk a little bit about just that or the experiencing that? You know, you were casting during that time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much like the event itself or the problem itself. That one specific point where the issue was like came up. Like, that's a big deal in that then Cypher proceeded to replay the match and lost it and then lost twice more with the same deck. It's not so much that exact event as much as it is all the times where it could happen. Like, we've had it happen in the past. You know, ATLC springs to mind, I guess. It's not so much that the rule set hasn't been defined, because the guy from Star Ladder actually knew what the rule would be. You know, that the rule said if you get DC'd, then the player who gets DC'd loses for the most part. But when is the grand final, when both players DC, then it's a rematch. So it was still pretty clear what they would do. The issue is, I don't even think like stuff like this should happen in a game where we're talking about like huge prize pools. Blizzard has probably the ability to have an infrastructure akin to that of the, you know, resume from replay feature from StarCraft II. It's really just frustrating that there's no technical fix for problems so benign. It seems so simple to not have to try to make a judgment call on stuff like this, because having to rematch then is just excruciating. I don't see how you could rationally defend the fact that, oh, maybe there was a chance the Chinese player won. Like, it's so unlikely. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being salty about this exact scenario. Like, I don't mind who won that game. Like, I just noticed that then Cypher's mindset was completely thrown out the window.
Yeah, I mean, it's if there's even 0.1% chance of winning, right? I mean, you can always make an argument that it shouldn't have been, you know, he shouldn't have been granted the win. And I think that was the case. It was definitely not 100%. My thing is just like the rules should just be crystal clear as to what happens there. So there's, you know, so the players don't have to feel bad or feel like they've been wronged or cheated or whatever. You know, they can, like you said, the mindsets can be a lot better going into the restart. So, you know, we've seen it. We saw it, like, you know, last year, too, in an event or two. And I don't know. It's just to the point where I just think that every event should have, I mean, they should just look at rules from other events, too, or whatnot. And we should have, like, a superset of all the rules to this point, if it's a pretty standard format. And shouldn't have these issues. You know, like, it should be, 2 years should be long enough, I think, to figure out most of the really weird scenarios.
I agree with you on that, but it seems like the rules were clear and they just did what the rules said, right? Like, there was no ambiguity, right? They said
they came up to us, yeah, exactly, and we pretty much said the standard was rematch, and they said, yeah, that's pretty much what we had in mind, so we ran with it. But
that was in the rules.
I would love to blame Blizzard for this, because, you know, when in doubt, but it's like, There's merit to that argument. There's the disconnect thing is super frustrating for a card game, because there's like always some chance that there's a comeback, especially in 2016 Hearthstone. Like, we used to play with Chillwind Yeti, and now we play with like Chillwind Yeti that like can be a Doomsayer 1 in 80 times, and it's like. hard not to like all those like corner cases. So it, even if they gave the win to like Cypher, who was really, really, really far ahead, then it would still suck for the other player to just like not have his 5% out to get out of it. Regardless of what the rules say, which in this case, I think the rules are... I don't think that's the place to lay the blame. I think, yeah, it'd be cool, though, if there was, like, a LAN client or someone who just play on LAN for Hearthstone. Because, you know, a lot of tournaments that happen, firesides are a big thing. Blizzard was honestly pretty fast about getting, like, a spectator feature out there.
Yeah.
It sucked, and it still does, but it's it was there. Like, you know, it's really important. We wanted that for tournaments for a long time. So, like, I think... Yeah, like some kind of a LAN client maybe would be pretty important if they, you know, intend to kind of have Hearthstone tournaments be a regular thing hosted by people.
Yeah, if not a LAN client, a restart from replay type of thing would be awesome. Like StarCraft has it. We don't have replays, but something similar to that. Just restart from disconnect.
They have the logs, right? Like they have the logs. Yeah. They know what happened during the game if you enable those. And all that you have to do technically is reconstruct the game. Like technically it would probably be a lot harder to put together than I'm making it out to be. That's obvious. But it's not as though the information is lacking as to what happened or there's no system in place to know the turns that took place during the game, I guess, up until the point where the disconnect occurred. So the infrastructure to build upon that, I think, will have to come at some stage because the disconnects in Hearthstone, like they really, really hurt the mindset of the player because the variance and the way it works really makes it painful. Like in StarCraft 2, you had a weird, like there was a time before the replay system, resume from replay, where sometimes you had a rematch or like a council. Like you remember that? Like players could actually, like you had what, like a good... 3 to 5 players, or I don't remember, but you asked the pros that weren't biased or had like no vested interest, I guess, in the match, although that's really hard to evaluate, which poses another problem. But you asked them who was winning this, like who, like this base race, who won this, you know, in your mind most of the time. And usually the consensus would be pretty obvious and you'd have a clear winner at that stage. So in Hearthstone, it's just hard to set up that same infrastructure, and it's also prone to, well, I don't know, bias, you know, just getting people on your side, or you vote like you don't know what the motives are behind the decisions, I guess.
If there's just like a pause option maybe in friendly games, that alone would kind of fix it too.
A pause option, okay.
right.
Well, in that case it wouldn't have helped for Star Ladder, I guess, because both players DC, but if yeah, like if both players DC, the game should maybe auto pause. If one player DCs, then the other player should be able to pause the game basically till they relog. But yeah, I don't know.
I see what you mean. Just keeping the instant of the game, just at least on their server. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, just like stop the rope basically.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like it takes one really bad incident for it to just like zoom up the priority list, because I don't know. I don't see that being.
That's what happened with busy mode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They didn't actually add anything to the game, but they added a drop down in the BattleNet client.
Yeah.
The drop down was like, oh, you can set yourself to busy, even though it doesn't do anything. Even though they said it's supposed to block chat, it doesn't work half the time.
Really?
But it like shut people up about the problem, and yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, busy mode seems to work for me.
Had a technical fix, I think.
It's worked for me.
Yeah.
I'm streaming busy mode every day, and every other day people can message me.
Oh, man. Okay.
Messages pop up while it's on busy.
That's terrible. That's definitely not good.
That's weird. I actually never run into that issue.
Yeah.
It's odd. I mean, I just like hate that we're relying on these rules to solve the problem when you can solve them technically.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it just doesn't do very much to say... you know, this, like, it's to put down rules, like, it helps as a guideline. But if you can just avoid needing rules altogether by just having the infrastructure in place, I think that's, like, 10 times simpler. It avoids headaches, and you also, as a player, don't necessarily dislike an organization, get mad at the admins, whatever it is, because they made a call, right?
Yeah.
Which is one of those things that happens pretty often. Like, you hold people accountable for a decision that they made due to rule sets that they had to put in place, that penalizes you, whereas if you had the infrastructure fixing it itself, like, there's nobody to blame. Like, I guess you could bitch at Blizzard if you have a problem with the way it works, but in this case, just having the system allowing you to replay the game solve it entirely. I don't know. It's just, I feel like it should be a higher priority than it is.
Yeah, maybe it's interesting up there. I mean, again, like it had been an issue this weekend. A lot of people were obviously watching that event. That was the event of the weekend. So, yeah, hopefully we can see that on the priority list soon. With Starladder, we got a chance to see just generally the entire tournament. We got a chance to see some different players, right? They have a qualification and everything with Starladder, and just a mixture of some things. But one of the big things discussed in our community has always been breaking into the scene, and we've touched on it a few times, like several times on this show, but never really went deep into the discussion. So I figured it might be a good time to talk about it, because I know at this point, especially at this state of Hearthstone, we have a lot of the popular streamers. We have it's the same bucket of people, and over time they've gotten even more popular, and there seems to be a bigger and bigger gap, I believe, between the top and then just like the folks that are really good, that are top legend players, but just aren't popular yet. The question is how do we get, or how do the players that are our top legends, break into the scene? Like what's the best 3 or 5 steps that they can take? The most logical ones, just go play as many tournaments as you can. But a lot of tournaments they don't even get invited to, right? So there are more qualification tournaments, but that's still a very, very long process. So what do you guys think? What do you think is the best approach to it?
Oh man. I already see like Temple's from publishing a book about how to get in tournament invites. 3 steps to get you to tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
If you're, it really tells me that you say like it's a long process to play open tournaments. Like fucking right it is. Every single pro that is big had a very, very long process, with the exception of like very few, or like 4 or 5 who I'm not going to name because it's just firing shots. But it's like those guys are even out of the scene already, to be honest. So it's like there's a how do I put it? Okay, first of all, like the really popular streamers, for example, are kind of lumped in with the pros sometimes. But the sad thing is, like, those streamers have very comparable win rates to these unheard of ladder players. So when two people have the same exact, like, win percentage, the same level of just skill, and one player decides to put 12 hours a day into making content, and one player sits there playing ladder and complaining about how he's not getting invited to tournaments. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a pretty fair world, I think,
I guess so.
No, in that scenario, yeah, like, that is fair. Yeah.
Like it's Hearthstone. Are you gonna, I don't know, if the streamer has like a 66% win rate and the player who plays off stream has like a 67% win rate, it's like, none of the streamers that got to where they are did it through shortcuts, right? Mm-hmm. Crip has been grinding his ass off harder than anyone, doing like 12 hours a day plus the past 3-4 years. Every streamer streamed a lot. Trump like streamed a ton, super consistent, like all of us.
Yeah.
All the big streamers do. The pro players, on the other hand, are just getting like there are. I will say this: it's a huge problem that people can't get into the pro scene in Hearthstone. Mm-hmm. It's a huge problem because it is difficult in for the people that try to do it based off merit, which is like guys like Ties and like Life Coach, where their entire following is based off of like purely tournament notoriety. They're not like. They didn't like start as content creators. They just started with open tournaments and went into, I don't know if Life Coach did open tournaments, but that's how Ty started. Now they're like, they're great players obviously, but they're when people watch them, they're known for their tournament play. So like the thing is, Hearthstone's this unique game where it's like the only esport where the individual personalities and the individual streams are a bigger deal than the tournaments. It's the only esport like that. Every other game, the tournaments blow away individual streamers by viewership, like tenfold. So Hearthstone's in this weird spot because people just don't really care about a lot of the tournaments that are happening. And a lot of that is just because of how oversaturated it is. Like, it's super easy for anybody to put together like $5,000 to $10,000 if you're a company, and then just like throw some mediocre event and then like broadcast it. And it's one of them every weekend, so none of them really matter in the long run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is because the game is young. It's just going to take time for there to be like a structure that develops and have meaningful tournaments. People are very against the full invite thing as of late, for sure. So most tournaments are like, they have like a good amount of open slots, but you know, I want, in my perfect world, every single tournament has zero invites, literally zero.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would never have a high profile tournament with a single invite. I think that's a stupid concept. I love open tournament. Like that's how the entirety of Magic works.
But you know why people do that though, right? With the invitationals, and it has more to do with a more defensive posture from the standpoint of viewership. You know, it's like, if you don't want Forsen and Trump to be, and Mamaz and yourself to be streaming on top of your event, and it gets back to the point that you made, that just events or streamers seem to, you know, be more of a popular thing than the events, then you'd invite these players, right? Like, kind of like what ATLC does, right? At ATLC, they invited everybody so that literally nobody streams over them. So, you know, it's a smart strategy and from the standpoint of hosting an event.
Right.
So, I mean, so if you were to go, you know, like if you decide to just have a complete open tournament, then, you know, you risk the standpoint of just not having very much viewership. And therefore, you know, are sponsors interested in helping with the prize pool and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. That's a good point. The thing is, like, how can the tournament scene ever outgrow the individual streamers with that kind of mentality? At the end of the day, like I said, it's these companies that throw together $5,000 to $10,000 and they want to do a one-off event.
Like, yeah.
These people are not going to take risks. They just want to cash in on easy Hearthstone viewership real quick. So, you know, they run their tournament. It gets like 4,000 to 8,000 viewers overall, but by Twitch metrics, it's actually like pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those companies would host like a league tournament, they would have under 1,000 viewers. So, and you know, the big teams wouldn't even play. So it's like, I think that it makes sense why the system is what it is, but it's just one of those things that's going to take time to fix. And like, I personally say, I'm working on like really, really, really big projects to completely change this. But yeah, like I think like a year from now, it won't be a problem anymore. I think there'll be a clear cut structure for just players that like want to make a name for themselves through purely performance. There'll be a structure that does that. There'll be tournaments people care about.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think, well, I can't say for sure, but I hope at one point Hearthstone tournaments outgrow individual Hearthstone streamers by a lot. I think that would be really cool because it's like kind of the natural progression that every game went through. Start with the big individual streamers and then the tournaments take over. So I think it would be good if tournaments mattered more. Like, as a team owner, that would be sweet too. I don't mean to cut you off. I'm rambling a lot. But I think one of the things that sucks the most from the whole like esports side of Hearthstone is it's actually like just far and away the least profitable like esport as far as sponsorship money is concerned.
Mm.
Like, it's the fourth biggest esport, but sponsorships, like sponsor interest, doesn't reflect that at all. The viewership's insane and everything, but for some reason, like,
yeah, why is that?
Traditional sponsors are like, a lot of the traditional sponsors are electronics manufacturers, and
yeah, exactly.
You can't really get an iPad player to pay like $200 for a keyboard. It just doesn't make sense.
So, $200.
So don't you want that really badass SteelSeries mouse for your APM? I don't know. Like, it's just, it doesn't make.
So you have to look into like other sponsors, and then like Blizzard, like basically no-sir'd all the fantasy sites. So then the, it's like, you know, it doesn't leave much room for like for organizations and pro teams and everything to like, it's really hard to warrant signing a full-time professional player. And
yeah,
there's some people that are just slugging through it despite that. They're like, I want to be a full-time Hearthstone pro, I want to be known for my merit. And these guys, you see these guys grind away at it, you know, and they're on their like small team, and nobody has like a huge stream following or anything, but they're really great players. But yeah, there's just no structure to like to generate sponsor interest or to like make a living off of it. So like, I don't know, maybe if more people could do it full time, it would be better as well. But like I said, I'm gonna do something
big to fix this.
Exactly.
There's two ways to fix it. I'm gonna do both of those things this year. So that's
all right. Well, that's actually really good news to hear that. Yeah.
Noxious, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I could just go back to the earlier days of Hearthstone, and I feel like things have changed a lot. Like, I remember the first, I don't know if it was the first, but I'm guessing like EU versus CN was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it was like a huge Swiss tournament. There was also DreamHack, which was also like kind of pioneering this thing, where I guess you could make a name for yourself. The problem is a lot of those events, there are a lot of qualifiers. Those still exist, but I feel like there's a lot of established tournament organizers that don't run that format anymore, or if they do, it's only a small portion of their finalists, or the players in the event aren't necessarily all qualified. Like Starladder is a good example of that, I guess, because they had the China side had a huge qualifying process. Yep. We had mm-hmm. also a qualifying process on like the Western side, so to speak, and like a lot of those names you tend to see are all the same, but the pool of players who participated in the initial event is kind of narrow. So yes, you do have like the qualifying process, but you still don't have too many people that can engage in it because there's a limited amount of space for that type of event. So it would be nice to have like an ongoing way to rank players or to see their performance that is not the, you know, last day of the month ladder report that Blizzard mm-hmm. does. Because I'm sure a lot of players are great, but they just don't end up at the last, you know, the best spot at the end of the season. And maybe they don't have time for tournaments, or if they do, they don't necessarily go through the qualifiers. Hyper consistently, or if they do, it's a smaller event and they don't get the publicity that they want. Mm-hmm. And usually you have to kind of be like, I remember when, you know, Oskaka wins BlizzCon and his next thought is, you know, I should be streaming now, right? And he realizes that and he says, well, I don't want to stream. Like, I just don't want to do that. Stan Sivka also doesn't like streaming very much. Mm-hmm. Yet these two guys are top tier players. Like, it's kind of hard to, not do one without the other nowadays. It seems like you're expected to do both if you're going to be playing for a team, which incidentally also means that you have to divide your time between pure practice and streaming, because putting the both together can be somewhat difficult, if not impossible, for some people. So I don't know. It's a headache. I'm eager to see what you guys do, Temple Storm. It'd be nice to see.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with it's a very difficult problem to solve, but I think it does have to do with branding, you know, branding a circuit or branding a series of tournaments that only focuses on this, you know, that, you know, the community can know that this is what it's all about. And, you know, maybe they end up just watching it just because of how popular this brand is. And, you know, if Ray, you're working on something, Tempo Storm is definitely strong enough to do that, you know, that the brand and no Joe Schmo, like third party or some new tournament organizer can pull that off. It's going to take Blizzard or one of, you know, the big teams, I think, to be able to do it. So looking forward to it. I think it's, yeah, I think right now we could use, I think, a little bit more, like we could use a bigger pool of players, like in that kind of low to mid tier in terms of just notoriety and that's, you know, that sort of thing. We saw some of it in Starladder. You know, there are some guys like, we were seeing Stan Sivka kind of rise up. Cypher, you know, even Lange, you know, Shenza. I mean, that it's cool to see those new names.
Chanze, yeah.
You know, those guys, they are probably been good for a while. We just didn't get a chance to see them in a high profile place. So I think it's good. It's gonna build more storylines too for Hearthstone generally, and that's where I'm most interested. I'm just most interested in seeing just more players, because a lot of the, you know, a lot of the streamers, I'll just be frank, a lot of the streamers are doing it just, you know, it's their job, you know, to do it. And we've seen them a lot. We've seen them over the, you know, a couple of years now. You know, we've seen the same characters and they're our favorite streamers and players, but it's always nice to get, you know, a new personality on the scene and how that mixes with all the other guys too. But okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back, going to talk some net decking and then talk some cards, design discussion. So we'll be right back. Sit tight. See you soon. All right, guys. Well, we are back, and this is Value Town. For those of you just tuning in, I'm Chaman V, and I'm joined here by Raynad and Noxious. And it's time to talk about net decking. And Net decking. This is actually a topic that Noxious wanted to bring up on the show. Kind of net decking, I guess, versus deck building. And we do have, you know, some Ray I think is one of the best deck builders we have in the community here. You know, you coming out with different ones. You coming up with every single deck in the community. No, but I think it'd be a pretty good discussion here, and just really talking about the prevalence of net decking. I guess how is it affecting innovation? Is it affecting what we see at the top of the ladder? And you know, just this kind of I'd say dullness. You know, just having the same five decks at the, you know, at the top of Legend every single season. It's prevalent like every single season, right? Is this because of net decking, or is this just the nature of the game? And Noxious, I'll have you start off, actually, since you wanted to bring this up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I brought the topic mostly as like a general discussion tool because I don't have anything against net decking. Like, I don't mind net decks. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely normal and natural to have it be a thing. The only issue that I might have with the way like the deck building in Hearthstone occurs is it's probably got more to do with the way in which you're not incentivized really to try out new stuff. Like there's no format right now, like tournament wise, where you really get to change your deck or understand your deck to the point where you can tech it yourself. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I find super interesting in, let's say, Magic, right? Like when you make your sideboard, you modify a few cards here and there. Yep. I keep going back to Magic as a great example, but like you need to understand your deck inside out before you can even bring it to a tournament, for the most part at least. And I feel like in Hearthstone, that's not always the case, since there's no room for you to, you know, have to deck build on the fly and make a mistake on that front. And for ladder purposes, like, we have a pretty diverse meta right now. Well, okay, I guess we did like 2 weeks ago. Early, like maybe like 3 weeks ago, and then it seems like it's kind of reverted back to the, like, a lot of the LOE cards, League Explorers, got phased out, and we're back to like pre-expansion meta, which is kind of interesting. But I don't know, like, the net decking portion doesn't bother me. It's the fact that there's little deck building and little reason to deck build, really, because it feels like if you're not, like, taking a specific skeleton of a deck to start with, then your matchups, again, like, a single card, say, a really punishing card like Dr. Boom will simply wreck you. Like, it doesn't matter what fun deck you're playing. Stuff like that usually just comes out. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay. Ray, how about you?
What exactly do you guys mean when you say like net decking? You mean like
a deck list, I guess, from like another player or online that you found?
Like what kind of websites?
Yeah, like Tempo Storm.
Like Tempo Storm, where I can go to get legendary. Like, I mean, I go there every day, so I see a lot of net deckers. It's a pretty good website. Like, I bought some of their shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
But what if you can only afford 90% of the retail price? All right, so I think
you use the code Tempo.
You can use code Tempo.
Doing shout outs early today, man.
Well done.
Yeah, so the thing with net decking, like Hearthstone is pretty much based on the same resource system that Richard Garfield made when he designed Magic in 1991. Mm-hmm. And that's like a day and age when the internet wasn't really taken into account at all when it comes to a card game. The whole concept of like a metagame and different deck archetypes constantly fluctuating among a group of people also wasn't really something that was taken into account when designing card games as we know them today. That's just kind of something that developed eventually because of the tournament system. And I think that, yeah, card games are now existing in this day and age when like information is so quickly accessible that like it's how do I put it? Like,
what Raina says is it's an outdated genre.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just like, it doesn't make it any less fun. You know, like chess is an old game. It's just in this case, like the internet makes it takes a huge part of the skill out of the game. I mean, I know when I started Hearthstone, nobody knew how to play the game. Like, people thought Iron Beak Owl was the best card in the game. so many like broken cards were unplayable. You know, like people thought Water Elemental is unplayable. People thought like Doomguard is unplayable. So many cards that we see today everywhere, like people just didn't think were good. Force of Nature Savage Roar, nobody thought was playable.
Yeah, that's been around forever.
Yeah, so it's like the reason to play the class, people didn't think either of those cards were good. So
yeah, I mean, I think it had a lot to do, because it's funny that you bring the, like, that specific combo up, because we had a bit of a discussion about it. And I feel like in Alpha, that combo was played everywhere. Just, it took forever for Strifecrow to bring it.
He didn't even bring it.
No, I remember Strifecrow built a deck. I mean, he didn't start it.
No, he didn't start it, for sure.
No, what happened with combo is, at first, nobody played it for the longest time. Strifecrow designed the early Druid decks with no combo.
The Yetis, like, and everything.
Pyromancer and Claw to deal with Blood Imp, stuff like that. And then Strifecrow made, like, you know, lists with Sun Fury as a tempo card, and just, like, you know, he polished all the lists. But, you know, Kayuki started popularizing the combo among, like, the whole, whatever the pre-Cloud Nine team was called, Doghouse or something.
It was Liquid Value. Kayuki was on Liquid Value. But,
okay, yeah. So Kayuki had single combo, one Force, one Roar. And then Raynad, first tournament player to start playing double combo.
Double combo.
And then the first tournament win with double combo was
the DreamHack?
DreamHack Summer, where it blew up. Everyone is playing double combo DreamHack Summer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, that was like the history of... I'm always really, I don't know, I always care a lot about the history of those things. But anyway, net decking, right? So this is the thing with net decking. I think, like, the major problem with it is that it basically makes a game feel stale, even though it's not stale at all. Like, we play a million games on ladder, and it's like, you'll lose to this, like, anything can happen deck, and you're like, oh, whoa, that was kind of cool. Where do you find this? And you look on Twitch, and it's like, oh, you see all these streamers playing different anything decks, and you find a bunch of deck lists online, and then, like, in your mind, you've played, like, you know, three games against this, what should be a ridiculous deck. It's a control paladin deck with, like, 3-mana, 3/3 Murloc. But you're, like, already like, oh, another one of these.
This is boring. Yeah, you're already jaded.
Because you know every card in his deck, and you're like, oh, another one of these unoriginal kids, even though the deck's been played for 2 days. Like, just because information travels that fast, it basically makes you feel like a metagame is stale, even though it's not stale at all. Like, I mean, if you just, like, pull up, like, the snapshot right now, for example, is just, like, a reasonably accurate example of stuff that's played. You can see that, like, 8 out of 9 classes are represented in the top 2 tiers. Everything except Hunter has at least a tier 2 deck, and then Hunter's in tier 3. Whereas you look at the metagame, like, a year ago, there were only, like, 4 playable classes or 3 playable classes at all. So it's, like, ridiculous how much variety there is right now. And all these decks are wildly different. Like, for the most part, Blizzard's done a great job of making sure that every class has multiple archetypes that are viable. The balance is, like, reasonably good. There's just certain neutral cards in the way of that. Cards like Mysterious Challenger are totally fine, to be honest. It's like Haunted Creeper and Shredder are the problems of that deck.
It is the rest, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the supporting tools around it that make it completely unbearable on tempo.
So they basically, like, I don't know, you've never seen this much variety, but still the game feels stale just because of how fast information travels. For a card game in 2016. And, like, if Blizzard was super, super progressive with card games, if they threw out every single, like, old notion about card games out the window and they were, like, doing, you know, patch up, like, balance updates every 2 weeks, not even balance updates, but just, like, patching some existing cards every 2 weeks, and they were releasing,
A few cards.
A few cards every week.
Yeah.
Like taking a really modern approach of, like, okay, well, these guys digest content very fast. Let's give it to them. That would be great for the players, like, that play a lot. But then, you know, they also have to take into account the people who, like, log in once every 2 months. Mm-hmm. And if those people log in, they're like, oh, my God, 200 cards came out since I've logged in. This is too much. This is overwhelming. And then those people feel like if they ever stop playing, they just can't get back in. They want to avoid that too. Like, so there's, I don't know, designing card games is a complicated thing, and you just have to create this, like, ecosystem that makes sense for everybody and not just, like, this vocal 1% of streamers and Redditors and stuff. So,
no, I mean, I would love that, you know, just being somebody that plays every day, if they release it like that. But from the standpoint of sales. You know, they have to sell like blocks of things. You know, that's why things come out in expansions or adventure modes, you know, and there's price, you know, there's pricing for those things. Otherwise you'd have to like subscribe to Hearthstone, you know, and then like each month and you get these new cards each month or some kind of weird thing like that. Or it's just like you have to continually buy packs, and that would be somewhat wasteful too, or at least it would feel very unsatisfying having to just try to get five cards when you have like all the other cards.
We've talked about this before, but I guess like one of the ways you could tackle that is by giving people the option to play certain, like, you know, there's been like clunky tournaments, you know, you don't get to play with like Pauper, right? Like Pauper tourneys. Like if you have a specific subset of cards, then you can play those in a given environment where those cards kind of make sense and you're not necessarily hindered by your lack of a collection. I guess Arena kind of acts as that format. You know, community run tourneys could do that. There's the possibility of not playing with certain sets as well, which, you know, we kind of talked about like that in the past, but, you know, that's one of the other ways you can do this to refresh things up, where you don't necessarily have to have the new cards, or rather not collect the older ones, depending on how you make the format work. So it could be kind of cool, like a custom lobby. Again, same idea, keeps coming back, but you tick certain expansions that are allowed and some that aren't. So I could let people do what they want.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know.
I know what you mean. Like, just the kind of a bucketed system, I guess you could say.
All right.
I think we'll eventually get to that point. I have a feeling it might be happening sometime in the near future. Don't know for sure, but we're definitely getting to the point of Hearthstone where I think things needs to be partitioned, you know, like some of the card sets and things like that, or figuring out how we can not alienate just all the new players, and, you know, just have that. That's been a big discussion of recently too, which we don't have on the topic list today, but just talking about just new players getting in, right? I've seen even just, you know, high profile people asking, you know, on Twitter, hey, is it, it's like, which expansion should I get? Or how hard is it to get started in Hearthstone? You know, and then, you know, a lot of high profile people answer. And unfortunately, some of the answers is it's very difficult, you know, right now, unless you want to like really spend a lot of money right off the bat. And some people can, but most people are not going to be willing to do that. That's like a daunting wall, like a blocker right now for Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And we really need to do something about that. And there's a lot of different options. You know, I'm sure that's a huge topic right now within Blizzard. So I'm really, you know, interested to see what it's going to be for us, for the three of us. Like, that doesn't matter, right? Because we're always going to be just caught up.
But, yeah, like up to date, I guess. But like, I mean, like onwards to the topic of like net decking and deck building. I also want to touch on the distinction you have to make, I guess, between somebody who deck builds a lot and somebody who kind of just tweaks. Kalintel's a great example, I feel, of a really exceptional tweaker. Just saying as well is like, he's an incredible tech like player. It's really insane. So like you have these players that just build decks, like initial drafts of them, and then other players take those and just spin them 20,000 ways, and suddenly you end up with a really refined list. And sometimes it goes through phases where you go from handlock to demon handlock to mid-range demon lock, down to like demon zoo, like that just keeps curving up. And it's just this process where you end up with different tiers of the same stuff. And they don't look different, like at first glance, if you're not experienced at all, but they really are. Like the way they play, what they're trying to do, when they go all in, when they decide to, you know, play defensively, aggressively. So there's a lot of, I guess, subtleties that a player who casually plays Hearthstone won't pick up on, which I think might also lead to that like idea that, man, all the decks are the same. Like even Secret Pally's got like four different types of decks that were tried out during its inception, since its inception, that is, and you still encounter like any of those variants at any moment, which is kind of cool.
Definitely, yeah. But I think just the end of the day, there's like a lot more variety in Hearthstone right now than there has been in a long time. People just don't feel that way just because of how quickly information travels, you know, like after the first time you've seen something online, even if you've never played against it on ladder, the first time you play against it, like the thought in your mind is like, it's not, oh, cool, this new deck. Your thought is like, oh, one of these net decking kids. I've seen this already. I know everything there is to know about it.
That's depressing.
No, I mean, that's kind of the issue with net decking. And yeah, I don't know what Blizzard can do to fix that. You know, that's the problem. It's
yeah.
Hard.
And another thing too is just that there's a lot of perceptions. A lot of people obviously watch streamers, and a lot of the streamers, you know, tend to be high ranked in Legend too. And what you see at high Legend is definitely not the same as what you see. I don't know, between ranks 1 and 5, you know, 5 and 10 or whatever. And I think in that range, you know, pre-Legend, I think you see a ton of variety. Like, there's, I don't think there's nearly as many secret paladins in that range as there is in Legend, or at least the higher ranks in Legend.
It's the other way around.
You
man.
Think
rank
so?
1 through
yeah,
5
I was gonna say,
way
yeah,
better than Legend.
Wow, okay.
The Legend, the client is giving me ulcers. That's where all the weird stuff is.
Hmm,
like,
okay.
That's what, you don't know what you'll play at High Legend.
High Legend, true.
5
yeah.
is like literally the meta snapshot. Literally those decks.
Okay. Yeah, just because there's more, there's net decking is more prevalent, I guess, at that
yeah, point. It's like less people trying to be creative. It's also lots of people trying to make that final push for Legend, so they just want to play
yeah,
stuff
just play a good one.
Tried and true and safe. On top of that, like the whole star system and the Legend system are completely different in the types of decks they incentivize. Like, you would rather play a lower win percentage deck that has games that are twice as fast in like rank
true.
1 through 5.
Yeah.
Whereas in Legend, you don't really care how fast your games are. You just purely care about the win loss ratio. So it's like two completely different ladder systems in all together in one like terrible ladder system. And
oh, you hybridize everything.
Yeah, those are definitely good points. Yeah,
I like the way you're putting it though.
All together, a terrible ladder system. Yeah, net decking. One other point too is that you mentioned it a little bit earlier, Ray, where you feel like it removes a large part of the game. You know what I mean? Like whenever the whole deck building aspect of it, I think is very undervalued because of it. Just information spreads so much. And this is prevalent in all games. I think that's been one of the negatives of just the internet and information sharing. Like, I'll throw out another game, like StarCraft. You know, like, build orders used to be the thing in StarCraft. And sure, you could learn somebody's build order, kind of, right? If you played them like 50 times or something, 20 times, you could kind of learn build orders. But it's not as easy as just looking at a replay, and then you instantly know their build orders. And that sucks, because build orders, as well as deck building, are it's a talent, too. And it's a talent that's not valued, or at least it's not given enough value. And it's a big part of the game that unfortunately, when it comes to, you know, the competitive scene now, it's just kind of thrown away. It's just like, you just wait. That's what a lot of players do.
Figure it out.
I'm just
going
to wait. You know, I'm just going to wait until somebody comes out with something cool, and I'll just learn how to play it as well as I can possibly play it and win tournaments. And
remember that seven roach rush? Good lord.
seven roach rush.
Or like back in
the day, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy when it got figured out. It was like, oh god.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, if we were somehow playing an online game without the internet, their skill would be so much more readily apparent, where like the best player in a tournament would win like 95% of the time, I think. Whereas right now, the best player in an 8-player tournament will win like 30% of the time at most. Yeah, I think it would be really cool. But I think at the end of the day, what it pertains to Hearthstone specifically is Blizzard isn't going to make the internet go away. And Hearthstone is just a very archaic type of game. Even though it's a great game, it's just a really old type of game. And you're going to have to adapt in very... It's not a matter of like, oh, let's take this paper card game and then throw it online and let's incorporate some abilities like Avenging Wrath that would be too cumbersome with dice to do in real life. Like, that's cool to start with. That'll get people to play your game because there's no competition in the online card space. But like, they have to make it, in my opinion, they have to really push it basically because of the existence of net decking should basically change how Hearthstone is built, because
exactly, it should be warped around it pretty much.
Yeah. We're seeing a little bit of it with Discover. You know, like, we always talk about RNG and stuff like that, but Discover does change. It's a little bit of situational things, right? That it's different from game to game. Like, you're gonna get different card selections. Sometimes you'll get PO, you know, like Power Overwhelming from Peddlers. Sometimes it's you know, I don't know, it's like Priestess or something, right?
But let's give Warlocks more bad one drops. Like, I can't stand this PO Soulfire anymore, man.
Exactly, yeah.
This
exactly.
is it. They need some really bad one drops.
Yeah. The only one drop they've gotten in the past, like, ever since basic set is Reliquary yeah, Seeker.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's not even that bad. I mean, that one's pretty good, too.
That one's pretty bad. Also, Dashingly Handsome Streamer made a video.
I don't know that guy, but I heard he's got a really good website for net decking.
Mm. Yeah, thank God for that guy, man. Gormok and Reliquary. Both of those.
Oh, God.
All right, well, let's see. Next thing let's see if we can discuss is design. So we've been kind of talking about just a little bit of design, too. So
yeah.
Noxious, another topic I know you actually wrote a blog about, or a vlog about, or no, it's blog, a blog about involving Entombed and how you believe it's negatively impacting right. control, just the control
I mean,
archetype.
It's really extreme, right? Like, I made a really extreme statement. So for those of you who didn't see it, is like, basically, in a nutshell, Entombed limits the ability for the metagame to ever turn into, like, a control meta. Mm-hmm. Thing is that, like, the way I look at Hearthstone's, like, control, like, the definition we have of control in Hearthstone is completely different from the one you'd have in other card games. Because in other card games, I can control you on your turn. In Hearthstone, you know, that doesn't really happen that much, which makes the whole point about having initiative really, really important. And when I look at Entomb, I look at a card that says, you know, with 30 card slots and the ability to only have two copies of given cards in my deck, legendaries, only one ofs, I can have two copies of something that I really like if you're playing it as well. And I can also remove something from the board, which effectively acts as a sap. But it's a really expensive one. Mm-hmm. But in a control meta, and I'm speaking like strictly control meta, I'm not talking about, oh, yes, we've got druids running around and punching you in the face. Entomb is like, it's good, but it's not going to be game winning necessarily. But like in a control meta game, a card like Entomb just gives priests way too much additional threats, removal. It's like an all in one. And I think it kind of, like, I guess you could lose control warrior matchup if they just decide to tank up and turtle until mm-hmm. you die of fatigue. But it's just one of those cards that seems like it's stifling all the classes besides warrior to play control. It's just odd. I don't know.
Ray, thoughts?
It's just weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like the best card in the game in control mirrors, mm-hmm. for sure. But I don't know what it really limits. You know, I don't. You're still going to play your Tyrion and Paladin. You're still going to, like, play big minions. There's always going to be... there's always going to be, like, some kind of late-game limitation. Like, I remember really early on, like, maybe a year and a half ago, like, a card like Ysera, basically, I decided would never see play because, like, if Ysera ever caught on, then you could just play Faceless Manipulator and beat every Ysera deck. And if the metagame was like too fast, you couldn't play Ysera in the first place. So it's like the metagame is either fast or people play Faceless. And like both cases, you can't really play Ysera. So it, like, for example, with the priest argument, it's like, okay, either the metagame is like too fast for my slow priest deck to like be that good. Or if the metagame slows down, then Entomb's going to kill big minions. Like what I'm saying is, like, I think, like, yes, it's a good control card, but that's all it really is. Like, it priest could use something good, and if it's not going to be a two drop, then it might as well be that thing.
Yeah, I mean, priest. If you guys remember, priest, we had mind control back in the day, right? That was ridiculously cheap.
Well, yeah, that was
That was the broken card. But at least with Entombed, we have to still spend mana. It is a removal, but do have to spend mana. It is super strong, though. Entombed is, it's one of my favorite. I mean, I've been playing so much Priest, so it's definitely one of my favorite cards from League.
Yeah. I think, like, my issue with it is that if Blizzard ever decides to, like, I don't want to put it that way, but, like, slow down the meta where the goal is not to kill somebody from 30 in one turn or to have, like, a crazy amount of burst, then you have to get stuff that sticks on the board. And the moment you do that, then Priest just punishes you for even thinking of doing that. Like, I feel like there's many cases in which if they're trying to remove combos that deal an unreasonable, unfun amount of damage to face, which, you know, they've tried to do in the past, and it's got a lot to do with charge being what it is, then Priest when that those like I guess philosophical the philosophy changes to the design comes in, when they come in, then Entomb becomes somewhat problematic because it's like too much control, I guess, in one class. It's kind of like capping where you can make a control deck or what a control deck can be. But I don't know. Maybe I'm blowing it like out of proportions because there is, I guess, Murloc Paladin that came out and is basically shutting down priests pretty hard if they get.
Oh gosh, tell me about it.
Yeah, you really can't do much. Like Entomb won't
it's
help you. Like it's funny because I got a match where I double Entombed
the War Leaders.
Entombed two Murlocs from their deck. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And I still died. Like I still.
Well, you have
died.
To get the right ones. Like yeah, you still die if you get if you leave the War Leaders. If you can get the blue gills, which is impossible, they always just jam them with the instance they play them.
Sure. But
if you can get the two blue gills, then it's an easy game, but you never get the two blue gills. So if you're lucky, you get the two war leaders, and still you can die.
I've had a paladin go war leader, pyro equality,
yeah,
just to guarantee that like, they don't let you take it. They know what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, so I think second. Entomb... Sorry, right now, I don't think it's that problematic, but maybe in the future, I could see it being an issue. I mean, it is 6 mana though, so it's not like crazy like a sap, which is incredible for tempo because you can play behind it too, play something very strong behind it. But in Tomb right now, it's like when I run into like a control where one of you guys mentioned like with just any kind of a fatigue-ish type of deck or a deck that doesn't give you that many things to Entomb, then the priest, like any kind of build that you have for the priest is pretty weak, right? It relies on tempo. It relies on Entombed, right, to get cards. It's kind of like Thoughtsteal used to be, too. Priests generally always relied on being reactive and using your opponent's stuff with Sylvanas and Thoughtsteal. It's still somewhat like that, except for the dragon one. So... yeah, I don't know. I think Entomb could be definitely a problem. Like I think you do have a point that it could be a problem in the future. All right, Charge is another thing that we want to talk about. Charge is a recurring, and you brought up anything can happen. That's obviously, you know, a charge base. But there's been some talk on Reddit, too, about is it really Charge that's a problem, or is it actually Taunt not being strong enough? Is that the problem? So wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it. Ray, what's your initial thoughts on I guess, that?
Like the defensive cards in the game just generally suck. Like for the classic set, taunts were really, really underpowered. Like Ancient of War has terrible stats for 7 mana.
Yeah.
But it was still saw a ton of play in just classic Hearthstone to the point where like Black Knight was like in most decks just because it's like the only option for taunt. So, and then Belcher came out, which changed everything because that card was like, you're kind of free rolling taunt almost. It was just such a good card stat for stat that you weren't losing too much off the numbers in order to get taunt. And it was so good against, you know, combo, just getting the two taunts. So like, and that completely changed the meta to the point where like, even the aggressive decks are playing Belcher, like the hunters are playing Belcher and everything. So
even Death Lord sometimes,
yeah.
And some janky lists, yeah.
Basically, like I agree with that. I think taunts, not just taunts, but I think taunts and AoE are both very underpowered in Hearthstone, and those are the two things I wish would be stronger. Like the two best AoE cards in the game are both in Warlock, I would say, which is like Hellfire, Shadow Flame, except unless you want to count cards like Equality, which...
Nether, I guess, if you want to put it that... Like, Nether's a really, like...
It's expensive. Nether's too expensive.
Yeah. AoE is like if it was, Unleash, Holy Nova, Consecration. That's AoE.
Yeah.
Flurry. I think, like... it needs to get better. Like AoE across the board needs to be better. Like everything should be as good as Hellfire, you know?
Yeah. Excavated Evil was like a nice attempt, right?
What was that?
Excavated Evil was kind of like a nice attempt at Blizzard to give like a non-gimmick AoE for Priest. But with Lightbomb already in line, it felt like kind of
overkill.
Difficult to weave in sometimes. Yeah, well, I mean, people
overkill.
Have tried it, but...
So I just think the game needs more AoE. Because like Lightbomb is almost good enough. It's just AoE needs to be like a little bit broken, you know? Hearthstone has this issue where it's like, if you just keep initiative and you have some burst finish in your deck, you're going to win the game. So it's like, if AoE is going to be like Twisting Nether or Light Bomb and it's going to take your entire turn to clear the board, it's going to cost you all of your mana, then whoever has initiative is just going to play a threat again and you're in the same position the next turn. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what at that point, like, why does a card like Light Bomb exist in the game? Like, you literally just, it did nothing. Like, you played it, and then a turn later, it's the same board state. And that's, unfortunately, that's how, yes, of course, Light Bomb is very important in, like, the games that Priest wins. Of course, sometimes it's game deciding, but, like, I'm just saying, like, in general, AoE is overpriced in the game, and because of that, you end up with the dominant strategy for the past 2 years just being develop resilient minions, finish them with burst. That's like,
yeah, that is the formula for a top deck for a while
this
now.
It's been pretty much, it's been the same thing for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the problem though, is because you can't get like, there's no way to flip the game once you're ahead. That's the issue. And now if there was just like a reset button, you wouldn't just go playing it in every deck, even if it was overpowered, right? Like, you wouldn't play a 4-mana Light Bomb in your aggro, like, tempo mage deck. Probably you wouldn't play that. So it specifically helps control decks to make AoE better, and it would create more interaction because once you reset the game, everyone's on, like, lower resources on the board again, and it's just, like, it's slowing the game down, and it's making more interaction happen, I think.
Yeah, I think it's also not helping at all that the sticky minions, like, there's so many of them. Mm-hmm. Right? Yep. Like, you wipe a board, and there's a second board, and then they can redevelop on top of it. So maybe one part of the equation is minions don't die, as opposed to... Because maybe the AoE is just fine, except there's just way too many things that never die. And these are the only things that you play, which is funny enough. Either it's stuff that has death rattle or stuff that has so much health that you can't kill it ever.
I feel like the death, you know, you're absolutely right with death rattle. And I feel like was it GVG that introduced all the death rattle minions? Oh no, it was Naxxramas that did.
Naxxramas, yeah.
And I felt like that was a reaction to thinking that AoE was a bit powerful at the time, like with the flame strikes and the Freeze Mage was pretty big back then too. Just that first variant of it with Nova and Doomsayer. And even Equality, remember just the Humility Paladin and just that crazy...
Oh my God.
It was like impossible, right? I mean, that Control Paladin was very strong at the time. And I don't know, I felt like they added a bunch of Death Rattle, or at least that they chose that time to really, you know, put in a lot of the Death Rattle design in reaction to that. And we're at the opposite point now, where it's just like, oh my God, it's too... You know, the minions are too sticky now. So what do we do, like, from the standpoint of removal?
I don't think it's why they added Death Rattle minions, man. Okay. If you remember, the way that meta was actually the three most dominant decks were Zoo, Hunter, Midrange Hunter, and Rogue, like, Miracle Variants.
Oh, is it that? Okay, yeah. Maybe it was
and then,
that time.
And then they created Naxx, and the idea is like, okay, well, we don't want Miracle Rogue to have as easy of a time killing all your stuff, and we don't really know how to make minions, so let's just create some neutral 2-drops, but let's make sure they're unplayable in Priest, only good in Warlock.
Oh my God. Okay, all right.
And then, yeah, that was Naxxramas in a nutshell. And, AoE was never too good in the game, ever. Okay. There wasn't ever a meta where it was even close to being too good. But I'm just saying, like, yeah, death rattles are an issue or whatever, so on top of, like, printing less broken ones, you could also just a card like Light Bomb, if it's going to cost 6, it should probably silence the board first, you know? But then that would be bad design because that's really...
You can't play anything, yeah.
Well, it gives you less synergy with things like Power Word Shield that they want Priest to be playing. Light Bomb's a bad example. I mean, just like some other AoE. Like
Brawl's a good example of a board wipe to me. Like, to me, Brawl is... Mm-hmm. Like the Wrath of God of Hearthstone at this stage, pretty much. Like, you look at Twisting Nether, sure, it looks like the Wrath of God, but for all intents and purposes, a true control deck needs something like Brawl. Like, they tried to make Light Bomb the Brawl of Priest, and it's gonna work to an extent. But, like, maybe the issue as well is AoE, like, yes, it's quote-unquote bad compared to some of the death rattles, but going back to the charge minions, like, the fact that having, like, getting punished by having a board being vulnerable to AoE, like, it kind of pushes you to play charge minions, and the only reaction to that from the controlled side is try to survive, and AoE in that case, yes, it's relevant, but you don't have a board to clear, because you've already taken the damage coming in. Whether it's a combo deck OTKing you, your AoE is useless. Whether it's minions that stick, your AoE is useless. It's like, the damage always pours in.
I mean, there's a response to that too, though. There's taunt and healing, which there's a ton of in the game now that's good. I think we could use, I think we can use, like, better taunts, but I also think the main problem is the AoE, I think. I think it's just, the AoE sucks in the game because every AoE card basically makes you spend your entire turn to clear the board, and then you're just put in the same position next turn because Hearthstone is not like Magic, right? Like, if you wipe your opponent's board, they're not going to, like, top deck a land and be low on resources and out of stuff to play. Mm-hmm. Like, in Magic, you clear their board, they draw for their turn, they play the rest of their hand, and if you have the second board clear, the game ends.
Yeah, but pretty much.
In Hearthstone, it's like you clear the board and they just draw business every turn. There's never a skip draw step. Every card does stuff off the top, so they just...
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, yeah.
The initiative matters more than anything. So, yeah, I don't think eliminating all the burst combos is necessarily the right path. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Force of Nature Savage Roar nerfed.
Yeah, me too.
But, like, down to 10 mana, but I also think that even if they removed it from the game completely, there would be, like, whatever burst combos left would still see play. Like, the game fundamentally will always come down to burst finishes, you know?
And yeah, I find it weird, though, that they tried to bring in haste. Like, I look at the charge mechanic, and I feel like they just put it there because, you know, it's kind of a standard thing in card games where you have, like, oh, you know, we have this rule, you can't attack when it comes in. Let's make a fun spin on it and make it so this minion can do it. But in Hearthstone, it's caused, like, so many issues. Like, I almost just don't enjoy it too much because there's no difference between attacking with a charge minion and attacking with a non-charge minion. They can target the same stuff. The strength of them is usually a lot weaker, obviously. But as far as where the damage goes, you still get to, like, determine that. Like, Ice Howl is a good charge minion to me. Like, I like the design of that guy because he can be used as removal as opposed to, well, okay, I can either clear his stuff or go face.
Like, by that logic, why have spells in the game? Like, yeah, I mean, it's hard to design.
Why have spells and go face?
No, because that's not what I mean. I mean, why have spells?
You can play around them.
The only difference between spells and minions is the fact that spells have charge.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, having a charge mechanic.
Don't,
like,
you don't mind it?
Can you? Okay. How would you have designed a 350 card starting set? You just wouldn't.
I would have designed it the same way. I'm not saying charge is like, I would have done it differently because I would have probably put haste in the game. But, like, looking back at all the problems we've had, like, I guess there are some charge minions that are, like, well designed because they're not posing problems. Like,
a lot of them are Druid Oak.
Yeah, most of them are fine. It's just like the few outliers usually, like the few problem cards usually have charge or involved in the kind of combo with charge from what we've seen, which led to the Warsong Commander being changed, starting Buzzard with Unleash. Mm-hmm. Like a huge array of...
well, any of these kind of comboing things that involves the charge and you know, and leaves your opponent basically helpless to that combo. I mean, we see it with Anyfin right now. Do you guys think Anyfin is broke, you know, like bad, broken at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I don't like it.
It should probably not be in the game.
Yeah.
It shouldn't exist the way that it does by summoning the guaranteed Murlocs that you're looking for. Like, it's not a Murloc card at this stage. Like, I'm sorry. It's just the only five Murlocs you'll ever see are the five that are played right now. And possibly you'll see some that buff attack if we get better ones, or some that give charge, or, like, I don't even know, or have Wind Fury with charge. It's like the only time you'll ever see Murlocs being played with this is when they kill you right away. So it's not a Murloc card as much as it's like a combo piece in and of itself. I don't like that very much.
Mm-hmm. I like that it opens up the door to a new type of Paladin deck because Paladin didn't have a combo deck before. But I do think that it's just a one card Force of Nature combo. And we are very lucky that it doesn't have like one more good support card because if the deck didn't have to play trash like Acolyte of Pain, it would actually be just the best deck in the game. It's like very dangerous.
Would it be better if it was a legend card? Like you can only have
one. Yeah. If it was like a non-mana legend, it would eliminate the combo deck because you need two copies.
Yeah, the first one's never that bad. It's usually in that 10.
But I mean, when I play that deck, I mean there is like half the matchups in the game. When the game just starts, I'm just like, okay, I can't lose. And like, I play against Freeze Mage, I can't lose. It's like so many decks that. Yeah, that deck is dangerous as hell.
Yeah, it's auto win against a lot. Yeah, like that's to your point. Yeah, that's. It's a fun deck though. It's definitely cool, innovative, but yeah, I feel like there's some tweaks that need to be made to it.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Entomb Trap, really. Like I view it as just like it's a design limiting card that's going to eventually just need a counter, and when you need a counter, then you have to start changing the cards involved in it. It's kind of funny like when I see that card, like cards like these come out, cuz I feel like at this stage, Blizzard would be very cautious about releasing charge minions, like, or any type of effect that could be abused with charge. But like that one slipped through, kind of unnoticed, I guess. Or
it's funny, nobody noticed. Right? Nobody, you know, initially, right, when that card's being reviewed, everybody thought it was totally gimmicky, right? And when, I think for the most part, right, seeing that actually become viable is always an interesting process. But still too. Too powerful. All right, guys. Well, why don't we do some Q&A for those of you that haven't gotten a chance to ask your question. You can post your question on Twitter at ValueTownGG, and we'll start reading a few of these out, and then we'll call it a day. Let's see. Got a question here. Where was it? Okay, Alex Panito asks, what are your thoughts on Blizzard adding cards to a card pool instead of changing current cards in order to help balance the game? I think that's generally what they do, right? They don't change very many cards anymore.
They don't really, at least. They try to avoid doing it. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes back to... What were you talking
I would
about?
Be super okay with them doing that, like with them releasing cards and just never changing a card, if they actually released cards more often than like every 4 months.
Yep, exactly. Once that release content was faster.
Once that content comes out, it gets digested within like 2 weeks or whatever. Or if they spread it out, it's adventures. I can't even begin to express how much I hate adventures, but whatever.
Yeah, it's like a full content release. Ouch. Yeah, like 30 to 50 cards. And like five of them are viable, so it's just a lot of the.
It's not just that, but then you have the one like weak wing that has like all the bad cards, and it's just
exactly
like,
you do nothing for that week. It's true. Like also taking out so much.
The League of Explorers, we had a week of unplayable cards where it was like surf.
I have to agree with that.
And then they took a week off for holidays, and then we waited another week, and then the next it was like a 3 week break.
Trogs or something came up.
During the holidays, where everyone wants to play Hearthstone.
Yeah, exactly. I hear you.
I got some spare time. Come on, Blizzard. Play Hearthstone.
Yeah, you know, Blizzard. You know, they decided to stop the Overwatch beta during the holidays too. So yeah. Maybe it's just like, a Blizzard thing.
You wait 4 months for new content, and then you get like a teaser of it, like 1 week with like three cards that matter.
That's true.
Oh god. Yeah, I actually didn't play any Hearthstone until everything was released. I know a lot of people
really?
Did,
but okay.
With LOE, I basically didn't play it from day one of release to the very end. I just, like, I did the adventures, I unlocked the cards, but I didn't make a deck with them. It was basically, like, the lowest time I spent in the game, even including, like, the patron era, which I wasn't too fond of. It was really weird. Like,
Okay. I mean, I felt like they opened with Reno, right? So I feel like they shouldn't have opened with Reno. They should have waited a little bit, like, you know, just tease people with some and then give them Reno, because everybody was looking forward to trying that out. But when that 1 week just had Reno, it was kind of cool. It was kind of cool just to see how it affected or how just what kind of decks people built.
Yeah, but then like 4 weeks, like you have to wait 4 weeks before figure out what the metagame is even going to look like post-mention. Sure. Like it takes you so long before you get to the point where anything you make is relevant long-term. And so I feel like a lot of players might be just not very interested or engaged during that, the entire release process.
It's definitely hard to throw an event during that, you know what I mean? Because it's completely short term as to what's, you know, what kind of deck ends up being or possibly winning that tournament. I see your point. I definitely see your point with that. Okay, let's see. We got a lot of them on Twitter now. Okay, Pleasurable Pain asks, hey guys, do you think a stream for beginner Hearthstone players to watch would be a good idea or become popular? Grill streamer.
What, sorry?
So do you think a beginner Hearthstone player type of, I guess, stream or... She just says, do you think a stream for beginner Hearthstone players to watch would be a good idea or become popular? I think just the streams right now are good for beginners, right? I mean, unless you're talking about free-to-play. Like, would there be a free-to-play type of stream?
There have been some in the past. I feel like for YouTube, it's more relevant.
Yeah.
That type of, like, content for new players. Because a stream for new players would have to, like, D-rank all the time just to get... like the basics down, or you don't play with the big cards because, like as you said, free to play, or you don't play epics or a very limited amount of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a pauper stream could be nice, you know, low rarity stream. The guy never plays with anything beyond rares.
That's true. Yeah. I think you're right about the YouTube videos. I think that's the best resource. And for a regular stream to be popular, I don't know. I don't think it could become very popular, but, you know, it's like once you get to a certain point, right, then you're not a beginner anymore, and then you kind of move on, right?
People don't go to Twitch to learn. That's all I have to say. Like,
what do you mean? They give best educational streamers every year for those awards, right? So what do you mean they don't go to learn?
Oh, you're right.
Of course they do.
About that, man. I forgot. Reyna, how did you rank on that educational streamer tier? How'd you do?
I mean, were you nominated for that? I think you were, right? You were.
My stream caught on in like December 25th, and then the award was like a month later.
Feels bad.
I lost to
probably Trump
or something.
Trump. Yeah.
No, it was Crip.
Really, Crip?
Crip won every
category. Crip is a teacher in disguise.
Crip won every category. Oh man!
The title of the category is just matters who the nominees are, and whoever has the most fans at the time wins. Like, all those online award things are fucking joke.
Votes for the funny thing is like they get paid for that, right? Like
Forsen was on the esports icon thing, and you're right, the person, like the nominee, gets paid, you know?
That's what I found ridiculous. Like I saw the list and I was like, this is great, you know, people can vote for their stuff, it's community engagement. Then I look at the fact that they're getting paid for this and I'm like, what? No, you've got to be kidding me. Like, this is the most...
Well, what it turned into is
banking,
just like,
I don't know, it's just...
I mean, what it turned into is just like, oh, everybody just linking the voting, like, you know what I mean? It was totally who had the most followers and things.
It was funny. It was funny.
Not really funny, but it was more lame. It was more lame than funny, honestly.
Yeah, but, I don't know. I laughed.
Okay, next up. What do you think? Justin Mann asks, what do you think of changing Arena to where you draft 60 cards and then build a 30-card deck from those 60 drafted?
All the decks would look the same and the bad cards would never see play. So it's like
pretty much
there's a good balance where you want the bad cards to see play sometimes. Like that's a cool moment when like Corruption or something is good. Yeah. Or like somebody, you know, Angry Chicken goes off or something. It's like part of what makes limited formats fun. But maybe like draft 33 cards or something.
See 33 to 35, yeah.
Okay, here, this is kind of a different question. Lita Bot, I don't know if she actually bought or not, but with a high interest in better bots for Dota 2, do you think it is a good idea for... This is a different question. All right, next up, Ryan Morrison. How terrible is Control Hunter with Elise and tracking?
Very.
The what?
How terrible is Control Hunter with Elise and tracking?
How terrible is Control Hunter? You could have stopped there.
Yeah, exactly, right? When is that going to be viable? When is Control Hunter going to be viable?
When they get a way to actually get spell damage on their shots for all the cards in their deck. Like that, like you can't have that card, like that don't go face. They have to have like minion and like an incentive to draw without getting face damage. Because the moment you give them the ability to choose, like Cobra Shot, right? Like it's a ridiculous card because we look at it now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, this is exactly the type of card that, like, design-wise, that you'd like to be able to play. The only issue is, because it deals damage to face, like, and that much of it, Blizzard mm-hmm. can't keep increasing the numbers. Like, if it mm-hmm. omni-targetable, then you can't give it to hunters anymore. And if it, oh my god, if it allows you to draw into that phase damage, then you also can't give it to them anymore. Like, it's just, it's reached the point, like, hunters have reached a point where they need very specialized tools to become control heavy.
I think they just need more more spells. Just encourage you to build different types of decks. Like, lock and load will be broken at some point down the line. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time, but, like, it will be a good card. You know, just more cards like Clockwork No and stuff have to come out. More one mana hunter spells, but yeah,
like removal spells. Oh, what type of spells? Because surely not phase spells, right?
Phase spells and removal spells are the same thing. Like,
oh, true. I mean, that more
depending exactly. Yeah, pretty much.
Just traps. Playable cards. People have this like misconception where they like think it matters what cards do in Hearthstone. They're like, oh, what does a card have to do to make this class good? It's like, it doesn't matter. You just make it undercosted and stupidly overpowered,
and it'll be played. Yeah. Matter.
Like, that's all it needs. It's just broken cards.
I like the one mana 5/5 that spawns a 5/5 beast. That's a pretty cool one.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That would make Hunter pretty damn good, huh? The problem is you need to design a card that's broken, but like only in one type of Hunter deck. So like,
yeah,
like that card you described, like a one mana 5/5. Yes, control. It would make control Hunter better, but it would also make face Hunter better.
Yeah. You need a card that's like better.
You need a card that's broken only in control Hunter, right? So, you know, something
that's meta worm, like, of hunters, basically, like something along those lines.
Destroy a minion. Your opponent gains 5 life or 10 life.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool card. Like, it's broken, but it would push.
It's like, also not flavorful.
It might make Ridgerain Hunter too good, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit Hunter, so you have to do a different, like, maybe like, ooh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think 2 mana destroy minion, your opponent gains like 10 life, something ridiculous.
Are we going to. We got a couple questions about Shaman here. First off, Brody Quest asks, do you think mid-range Shaman can work right now? I tried a modified Gara list, and it is right now rank 3-5, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ray. Pick that one up.
What's up?
Mid-range Shaman.
Pick that question up.
How far off from being good?
It could be it needs an expansion or two. Like, right now, the best Shaman decks are... Like, look, okay, you know the whole aggro shaman, like, package of let's play every burn spell, lava shock, tunnel
yeah,
shock?
Yeah, the one that was really popular.
I've noticed you can combine that package with, like, so many wildly different decks. Like, personally, I like Unbound, and, like, I don't play Leper Gnomes or anything, so it's just kind of like an overload theme deck.
Yeah, that's fun.
But I also like Malagos, like the Malagos variant. You want to play 2 Doomhammer anyway, so you can, like, that whole aggro shaman shell still fits with Malagos deck. So
is that that's Ancestor Call Malagos or just straight? Okay,
yeah,
wasn't sure if it was a different one.
Yeah, because you only you play all the burn anyway, so you add one Malagos, one Ancestor's Call, and you're good.
Yeah,
that's
kind of like what you were talking about. Like, you give a class undercosted tools that do a lot of work and they're versatile. Let's say in the case of shaman spells, most of them just go anywhere you want them. So for all intents and purposes, you have like this crazy array of spells that either kills stuff or kills the opponent. And then you could build a deck around that. So for all, like, you could build any type of shaman with that like idea in mind. You were asking what it takes to make Control Hunter viable. I don't think you want to take that approach. Like, I don't think that's an approach I'd like. Like, redundancy and card effect, like Lava Burst, Crackle, Bolt, they kind of all do the same thing. They're just differently costed. I think at some point it becomes kind of... Like, because too much of the same stuff, it's not that it's boring, it's just that it risks being broken a bit too easily. Because when you get, like, I don't know, like, well, 5 Blade Flurries or 5 Deadly Poisons in Rogue, like...
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't think they should print cards like Crackle that just or Dark Bomb. They shouldn't make cards like that ever again. They should have cards... Like, League of Explorers is a great example of, like, how Blizzard learned... Like, they're getting better, basically, at designing cards, you know? Like, something like Reno, you're not going to play in every Warlock deck. You're just going to play in, like, a defensive one, a very specific type of Warlock deck where it's a broken card. Like, that's good design, you know? You want the cards to be that you print to be very good in specific archetypes.
Yeah.
You know? lock and load. You're not just going to throw into a face hunter deck. You're going to build a deck around it. Like the more cards they design like that, the better. And, you know, ideally the less crackles we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you just like play it. You get, like, not only do you just play it because it's good at what it does, but it's only good at what it does 75% of the time.
Yeah. No, I agreed. It's been sounding like just some tweets and just seeing some things on Reddit, just even some people guessing based on historical releases of expansions. But there's been talk that people are thinking that the expansion will be, the next expansion should be coming out, fairly soon, sometime in the next month, maybe even the next 2 or 3 weeks, people are thinking. Swaglord asks, what are your expectations for the new Hearthstone extension? I mean, Ray, you might actually know something, so I know you might have to avoid stuff, but what do you think is, what do you think the focus will be, or what would you like to see?
I would like to see another set with lots of playable cards that are very specific to specific archetypes like League of Explorers. I think League was feedback across the board. Everyone was really happy with that set.
Yeah.
When they like revealed Crackle, everyone was upset. Even in the Reddit post, people like saw the problem with cards like that. I think Blizzard like reads from those things and understands. They've gotten way better at designing cards. Basically, some cards won't go away, like Knife Juggler, like Haunted Creeper, like Implosion. But the new cards they're introducing are very good design, I think. So.
Okay.
I don't really care like what the theme should be or anything, as long as it's like continues to be good design. But yeah, dude, I wish I knew what this set was. I have no idea. League of Explorers, I saw like a month and a half or something before it came out, like all the cards. But for this set, I have no idea.
Sounds like Strife Crow might be the only person that knows something.
No. That's from a tournament thing. It's not.
That'll
be revealed tomorrow.
Okay, tomorrow.
Yeah.
I saw Frodian say something too. Was that related? Maybe that's related.
Yeah, that will actually be super cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Noxious, what are you looking for?
I don't know, man. Like, just the ability to have. Well, I mean, I guess as Reyna said, playables that encourage specific archetypes, and also things that make decks, make classes less like unidimensional. I guess because. You look at, let's say, Paladin, right? They've got so many archetypes. You could say Paladin is not like a single deck when you think about it now. You can make the Murloc Pally, you can have the Midrange Pally, which you don't see much anymore, Secret Pally, Ebola Pally. Like, you've got so many types of Paladin decks. And, like, on the other hand, I'm looking at Priest. I'm like, yeah, okay, we got Dragon Priest and we got Control Priest. We have two decks there. But, it still plays, the Dragon Priest plays in a very, I don't say boring, but I find it boring. I think it's like
it's
the most
linear.
Fun deck in
it's
the
pretty
game.
Linear.
By a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like so. It feels like I'm playing Druid without Innervate many times. Without the burst. So I don't like it very much. Like all these classes, like Warrior, like what have they got? Like, okay, Control Warrior, what's next?
Patron's so good.
So Belcher. Yeah, but like there's so few. It's getting wider and wider, but I just want more cards that enable this variety in classes. Like an Aggro Priest is like the go-to example that I take. Control Shaman would be great. I'd love to see something like on the very polarized side of Control. I don't know. It'd be cool to see that.
Do you think, though, that it's impossible to guess the theme of this upcoming set? Because like they started with just taking like WoW raids or something and porting them, making them a little more cartoony, but then League of Explorers came out of nowhere. They created characters, they created a storyline, and it's like loosely based on the World of Warcraft universe. But that's like, that just shows that it's entirely up in the air. It's Team Five's decision, like entirely what they can just make a world basically.
It's gonna be the Twisting Nether expansion. It's gonna be super heavy, like bunch of warlock demons, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, theme wise, I don't actually care either way, but I would like to see.
I'm calling it.
I would like to see an improvement to the Inspire mechanic, like something where it's used. You know what I mean? Like, just at least some card is used that has the Inspire mechanic, and then Rogue would be cool. I think the Rogue with the, the Death Rather Raptor and stuff was a good start to something. You know, that I'm hoping they'll extend upon in the next one, and then even Battlecry, Like, you know, we do see some brand, but, you know, we don't see the crowd favorite and things like that. We see people trying to do like shamans, Battlecry shamans and things like that. It'd be kind of cool if they added or gave some more tools to that type of build too, just to see how it could end up. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
I do actually agree with you there. I wish they would go back and revisit old expansion themes and add to them, you know, because like mech is a good example for me. Like, I would like to see more mech cards, and you can't just make like insane neutral 2-drop mechs, obviously, because that would push them over the top. But it's kind of lame that like it was a theme that was pushed so much in GBG, and then a couple of expansions later we've only gotten like Clockwork Knight and Gorilla Bot, and like Gorilla Bot's fine, but it, you know, we have
I think it also has to do with your idea earlier, right, of pushing content like every week or every 2 weeks. Like, you just release a new card here and there, like, oh cool, here we have a new mech, here we have a new demon, a new whatever it is, you know, a new Murloc, and we don't have to try to weave it in that whole expansion. So occasionally you'd have like very specialized focused cards being released, and maybe punctually you'll have people attempting to make those work. So I really want them to go for that sporadic release content.
It'd be interesting to be like, I don't know how the design is divvied up at this point, you know, because the team is so big, but it would be kind of interesting to be in that release room, you know, like when they're deciding like what cards to release, and you see all these designers probably fighting for their cards to be released because they don't want to wait like another 3 to 6 months to have their cards released. I wonder if it's that type of process.
Of course it is, dude. Gazrilla came out because somebody wanted to push it, and then somebody was like, all right, but I get to make Hemet. Oh my God. Obviously the way it works, right?
I guess so.
Well, that person does not like the community very much.
I guess not.
Hemet could have been anything else, man.
Yeah. If it's Silence the Beast, at least, like Silence and Destroy. Like, that could occasionally be playable, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Hemet costs like 4.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. BGH to 3 and this guy to 4.
All right, well, thanks everybody for writing in your questions. Again, that's the Twitter account we're going to be using for Valuetown, Valuetown GG. So follow that, and we'll be, you know, releasing all the Valuetown news and from that account more so than mine. But I think that's going to be it for the show. Oh, I didn't even plug the Patreon this time, guys. There's a Patreon for the show, patreon.com/Valuetown.
Yep.
Check that out. There's you know, lots of good rewards and milestones and all that good stuff. Really, you know, really appreciate all of the current patrons, which we showed during the break. You guys are awesome. But why don't we do some shout outs and, you know, call it a show. Noxious, you want to start us off?
Yeah, shout out to Soylent and Amino, my two current sponsors for the stream. The biggest ones, and Complexity as well, for backing me up and being, I guess, with me for so long.
All right, Ray?
Amino or Ameno?
Amino.
Amino.
Reyna's like, I don't even know.
Yeah, shout
out. Any shout outs?
Yeah, shout out to the viewers. Thanks for hanging out, guys. It's cool to see, you know, you guys being on board of the show. We're trying new things. We want to make it more entertaining for you. So shout out to Chris for, you know, just everyone. It's going to be improving. Make sure you guys tune in next week as well. Yeah. Shout out to Tempo, of course, everyone on the team, all that. Going to be a cool announcement tomorrow, I hope. They keep pushing it back.
It's supposed to be in the morning, guys. In the morning tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm excited for that. And that's pretty much all I got.
All right, my shout out's just a big shout out to the two of you guys, Noxious and Ray, for doing the show with me every week, and all the viewers too for coming and watching. I know we weren't here last week, but we're gonna be doing every week here on out. And like Ray mentioned, you can tell we've kind of changed things up and mentioned it in a video, but just to, for those of you just tuning in for the first time, we're going to have more topic-oriented discussions and even just have some episodes that are specific to a certain, you know, part of our industry, whether it's like content making or it's casting or things like that. So expect a lot more of these type of shows. We kind of including more people in the community, not just players, but we'll still be doing the player things, of course. I mean, we're never going to get away from that altogether, but just wanted to include everything. From the standpoint of Hearthstone, such a you know, beautiful space we've got, and there's a lot of people involved. Let's see, bots are going to be available, youtube.com/chanmanv. Definitely check that out. A big shout out to, you know, sponsors, my Tempo Storm for sponsoring the show, and their, you know, their sponsor Switch and G2A also. And for those of you that like the audios or listen to the show on you know, your iPhones or whatever, the audios will be available on iTunes tomorrow. It usually gets updated on the refresh, but on the audio feed, which I always send out, it's going to be available probably a little bit later today too. So definitely check that out. And if you do check that out on iTunes, be sure to rate it, you know, only if you like it. Don't rate if you don't like it, all right? Only rate it if you like it. Leave a comment, because that helps with SEO for the show. So definitely do that. That's going to be it, guys, for Value Town this week. So for Noxious...